Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Tuesday, February the 15th, 2022. February or February, however you would like to say it, exactly 15 minutes past the hour. It's interesting because the correct pronunciation, and that's one we get wrong all the time too, pronunciation. The correct pronunciation of February is February. But it's kind of like one of those words, caramel and caramel. It's spelled caramel. It's supposed to be said caramel, but people say caramel. So February, however you want to pronounce it. It is the second month of the year, and that is where we are. I do want to let everybody know here today on WWGH Radio, we will have the Adam the Computer Guy show today from 2:10 until 3 p.m. And then Voice of a People with Linda Sims, 4:10 to 5 p.m. today on this station. Now, hope everybody had a wonderful Valentine's Day. I had a busy Valentine's Day. I was busy doing some other jobs yesterday until 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and then went out last night and had dinner, and basically stayed busy all night. But that was okay. It's good to stay busy. Hope everybody had a good Valentine's Day. Did anybody do anything interesting for Valentine's Day last night? You know, when Valentine's Day falls on a Monday, it's kind of difficult to do anything. Now, I think a lot of men go out and they get the chocolates, or they get the flowers, or they get the cards, and they bring them home to the wife. But as far as going out and eating dinner, I really don't know if a whole lot of that went on yesterday because of Valentine's Day falling through the week. And it does seem that most people buying for Valentine's Day are men. Do women go out and buy Valentine cards? Do they buy Valentine flowers? See, I don't think you would get a man flowers. And I think maybe herein lies the problem. And to be honest with you, in my own mind, I can never remember hearing of a woman who got her husband or boyfriend chocolates. Now, I know that a lot of men will get their wife or girlfriend chocolates, but I've never heard of the wife or girlfriend getting the man chocolate. Now, I don't know why that is. You would think chocolate would go both ways, but for some reason, it doesn't. Now, flowers, apparently they just don't go both ways. But also, balloons have become big sellers, balloons for Valentine's Day. And, of course, alcohol. There is a lot of alcohol sold on Valentine's Day. So, hope you had a good one. Does anybody have any good Valentine's Day stories the day after Valentine's Day here? 740-383-9944. You know what the day after Valentine's Day actually means. The day after Valentine's Day actually means that Easter stuff will now be the prevailing item in the stores. Which, honestly, for about the last week, it pretty much has been anyway. All of the Valentine's Day stuff has been coming down or being sold, and you're starting to see the Easter stuff all over. You know what's so interesting to me? I remember when the Reese's chocolate eggs came out. Yeah, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. They come in the yellow package. That is one of the biggest sellers on or during the Easter season, I should say, of anything. You see more of those in the store. They come out earlier every year. They have far surpassed those Peeps. You know, I don't think people really buy the Peeps much anymore. But those Reese chocolate eggs are so popular. And what is funny to me about the Reese chocolate eggs is that it's just a Reese cup shaped like an egg. But they charge you more because it's shaped like an egg. Which I really don't understand that. I don't think they do anything different to them. I've had Reese chocolate eggs. But for some reason, people like their Reese cups shaped like an egg. Because the eggs will always be like 50 cents to a dollar more than a regular package of Reese cups. But people buy them. They want the egg. Does anybody have any idea why this is? 740-383-9944. See, that's one of those curious things again. Why is it when a Reese cup is shaped like an egg, do people buy them and are willing to pay more for them just because it's shaped like an egg? And I think even if you would check the ounce content on the Reese egg, I don't think there's more in an egg than there is in a regular package of Reese cups, amount-wise. So why do people like the eggs? Does anybody know? If anybody knows the answer to that, give me a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. All right. What else is on the agenda here this morning? Well, I did want to talk about something. I talked about this back, I think it was at the end of the year last year, that I found out that Bob Mason, the man who founded radio in Marion, started WMRN back on December 23rd, 1940, was buried in the Marion Cemetery. And I did not know he was buried in the Marion Cemetery because I know he was married twice, and I know his second wife did not live in Marion. And I don't think either one of his kids were buried in Marion because they went on to live different places across the country as well. So I just did not think Bob Mason was buried in Marion. And then last December, I found a copy of his obituary, and I found out that, yes, he is buried in the Marion Cemetery. Well, over in the cemetery in late, when was it? It was probably late December last year. Angie and I went over to the cemetery to look for his grave, his tombstone. And the problem was, we went kind of late in the day, and of course back in December, it got dark very early. And also it was kind of a rainy day, and we were looking all over for this tombstone. And one of the problems was, he is in Section A. Now we did know that. He was in Section A. But if you are in the Marion Cemetery, and I'm going to say on the north side, because, you know, you have the north side and then you have the crossover on the boulevard to the south side. On the north side of the Marion Cemetery, which is where I thought he would be, there are really no section markers. Now, as I say that, here's what I want to say. The section markers on the north side of the Marion Cemetery have names. It's not like A, B, C, D, E, F, G. The sections are not like that. They just have names. They're named different things, like Oak Harvest and so on and so forth. So we drove around there, and I thought, well, obviously I don't see a Section A here, and never even thinking about the other side of the cemetery. And then it dawned on me that, well, maybe it's the other side of the cemetery. So we did go over to the other side of the cemetery on the south side across the boulevard, and that is where Section A, B, C, D, E, F, G is. So we found that. And Saturday, we went over and we did find Bob Mason's grave. Now, if you ever do want to see it, he is buried with his first wife. The tombstone is in the first row after the Harding Memorial. So you have the Harding Memorial, and then behind the Harding Memorial is the cemetery. The first row of graves after the Harding Memorial is where Bob Mason is, and he's kind of toward the south end. First row, south end. And he's got a halfway decent-sized a tombstone. And like I say, his wife is there. But it looks like not a whole lot of care has been kept on this tombstone since 1966 when he died. And I think it said his wife died in 61. So it's been a while. And as I say, both of his kids have since went on to their reward, Bob Mason Jr. in Virginia. And they did not live around here in later years, so they probably were not going to the cemetery very much or at all later in their life. But he is out there, so it was kind of interesting to go out there and see Bob Mason's grave. And while I was out there, I went over to Madge Cooper's grave. It's always interesting to visit that because I knew Madge, and I was actually at her service and burial out in the Marion Cemetery. Now, she's over on the other side. She's over on the north end in the She's at, you know how some families have plots? She's over with the Guthrie family now because she married Howard Guthrie. And it's also kind of interesting because Madge is there, and her first husband, Howard, is there, and Howard's parents are there because it's the Guthrie plot. But there must have been a leftover plot because Madge's second husband, Samford Brokaw, who actually was a big name in broadcasting in New York, is buried there as well. So she's got both her husbands there in the Guthrie plot. And then the other tombstone we visited, which is also on the north side of the Marion Cemetery, is Carrie Phillips. Did anybody know that Carrie Phillips was buried in the Marion Cemetery? Of course, Carrie Phillips was a big wig here in Marion in the retail industry. I don't know how much she had to do with the retail industry. Probably more her husband. But she became famous for, let's just say, being friends, having a long-term relationship with President Harding. So she's over there. And again, that area is not all that well kept either. You know, these people have been gone for so long now. I think Carrie Phillips died in the early 60s. Bob Mason died in the mid-60s. So they've been gone quite a while. And I guess that's what happens when you've been gone a certain amount of time. When you've been gone and everybody who you know is gone, who comes and pays attention to your grave? Probably not many people. So I think those were the only graves we visited. But I do want to say this. Now, Carrie Phillips, if you look it up online, and I think a lot of people go and visit her grave because she became famous for being one of the mistresses of President Harding. But it says it's in like section 56 or 57. But if you look up the map of the Marion Cemetery, there is no section 56 or 57. It only goes up to like section 12 or 13. So I don't know how these plots are laid out or where this information comes from, but it's a little confusing. Does anybody have anything to say about any of these people? Bob Mason, Madge Cooper, Carrie Phillips? 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz. 28 minutes past the hour here on this Tuesday, February the 15th, day after Valentine's Day. Now, one other thing about the Marion Cemetery, because we've talked about this on this show many, many times, and that's about Eber Baker. And I'm going to make this story short. Eber Baker was buried, well, he's the founder of Marion, or at least the person we credit as the founder of Marion, was buried in the Quarry Street Cemetery. And I think he had actually donated the land for the Quarry Street Cemetery. And that cemetery is still there, although it is not in good shape anymore. Well, his daughter was buried in the new Marion Cemetery, which is the cemetery we have out here now. Now, the story is that when they closed the Quarry Street Cemetery, that they took some of the bodies and they took them to the Marion Cemetery. And actually, there have been claims over the years that Eber Baker and his wife were both moved over to the Marion Cemetery, and their tombstones were moved over there. And there actually are markers showing those spots. Now, why am I bringing this up again? Well, here's why. I was doing a little more research on this in the Marion Star newspaper archive. Because the Marion Star newspaper archive goes back to the late 1800s. And I'm trying to find any story that has to do with Eber Baker's body being moved to the Marion Cemetery. Now, here's what I find. There is no story of the body being moved, although there are many stories that mention that he was moved. But I believe there's a story from the late 80s, maybe late 70s. I didn't print it out, but there was really no need to print it out because it just says this. Now, this is interesting. Apparently, back then, somebody from the Marion Star went to the Marion Cemetery, and they said, "What is he there?" Which I think was a common question. And the Marion Cemetery's quote on this was, "There is no record of him being interred there." So, there you go. We've talked about it before. The Marion Cemetery's stance on this is, they have no record of it. Now, if it was done, why would they not have a record of it? It's not like they don't keep records of things going back that far. And you know what's funny about it? Everybody who says that Eber Baker's body was moved, nobody knows exactly when it happened. Did it happen right as the Quarry Street Cemetery was closing? Did it happen right as the Marion Cemetery was opening? Did it happen when people realized that we don't want people buried on Quarry Street anymore? What was the reason that this was done, and why was it done? And I'm not even sure how it was done, to be honest, because back in the day when Eber Baker died, I think there just would have been wooden boxes. I think it, and there was also the cholera epidemic that went through the Quarry Street Cemetery. But in writing, in the Marion Star, there is an article in which the Marion Cemetery says there is no record of anything being in that plot that Eber Baker has in the Marion Cemetery. There is the new marker for Eber Baker. There is the marker that was brought over from the Quarry Street Cemetery, but there is no record of anything ever being interred there. So there you go. Does that solve the mystery for you? 740-383-9944. And to be honest with you, I would think that Eber Baker, being the founder of Marion, and at one point having a middle school named after him, that where he is buried would be a significant place. Maybe a spot on the Ohio Historic Landmark Tour. But nobody seems to know. And if he is not over in the Marion Cemetery, I wonder who started that rumor. Was it because his daughter was buried over there? I really don't know. Has anybody ever found any information on this? I think this is one of the great mysteries of Marion, ranking up there with Gypsy Queen and the Merchant Ball and things like that, because here you have the founder of Marion, who was buried in the Quarry Street Cemetery. And we know there are still people buried in the Quarry Street Cemetery. But yet, there was a story that came about that he was moved over to the Marion Cemetery. And that is where his marker is now. There's no marker for Eber Baker over in the Quarry Street Cemetery. But yet, the Marion Cemetery has no record of him ever being interred there. Now, you would think if there was going to be a record they were going to keep back in those days, because this would have been prior to even President Harding being there, that they would have kept the record of Eber Baker being moved over there with his wife. Also, when I was over in the cemetery, I visited the receiving vault of President Harding. And you know what I learned? I've obviously been by it. It's in the cemetery. But I never really stopped and got out and looked at the receiving vault. It's kind of a fascinating little place over there. And apparently that's where Florence Harding used to go. And she was kind of a recluse here when she moved back to Marion after she left Washington. She would go over and feed the people, the guards, who were keeping an eye out on President Harding's body. Apparently that's one of the last things that Florence Harding did before she left this planet. So does anybody have anything to say about anything going on over in the cemetery, of course, from Eber Baker, the Eber Baker mystery, to the Harding receiving vault? Did anybody have a relative or a friend who was one of the guards who guarded President Harding's body? Now, I'm sure they're all gone now, because I think the body was guarded until 1927. I think that's when it was moved over to the memorial. So, even if you were a young person in 1927, you would probably be gone now. Now, there's a chance you could be alive, but probably slim and none at this point, because you would probably have had to have been born in the early 20th century. But did anybody ever know any of the guards who used to guard President Harding's body for that period of time that he was in the receiving vault over there? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. Or do you have anything more to add to the Eber Baker story? But I just thought that was interesting, and because we had talked about it so many times on this show, I did want to add that there is no record of his body being transferred over to the Marion Cemetery. And that's coming from the Marion Cemetery. Okay. Well, what else is on the agenda here this morning? Okay, well, here's something. Now, this is also a long theme on this show. As many of you know, I was having an issue with my tires. I have one of those electronic tire gauges in my car that lets me know when one of my tires needs air. And I was saying, back in December, the light came on saying one of my tires needed air. And because it was the holidays and I was kind of busy and none of the tires really looked like they were going flat or anything, I kind of put it off for a week or a week and a half. So then I decided I'm going to go get air in this thing. And about a day before I decided I was going to go get air in it, the light went off. And the light stayed off for quite a while. Well, back in January, I think it was middle or late January, I went over and had all the routine maintenance done on my car, had the oil changed, had the tires rotated, had all the fluids checked and the maintenance done. And about a week after that, that tire light came on again. And I thought, oh, here we go again. So I'm trying to look and figure out which tire is losing air. Which tire do I need to put air in? So again, I drove on it for like a week. And on Sunday, which was one of the coldest days of the year, the tire light went off again and is still off. Now, does anybody know what could be causing this? Now, I understand that air pressure does have a lot to do with the temperature outside. But this is kind of funny that it keeps going on and off. because it makes me think that I don't need air in the tires, and that it really just has to do with the temperature outside. Does anybody have any thoughts on this? Because as I've said many times before, I don't know anything when it comes to cars. I have no zero idea when it comes to cars why things are happening. But the light is back off. Even this morning, the light is off, so it's been off for, what, 2.5 days now. Why it goes on and off, I don't know. But again, phone lines are open here this morning if you know, because I will take any mechanical advice. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. 39 coming up on 40 minutes past the hour here. Again, if the line's ringing busy, just means we're on the line with somebody else, so keep on trying back in. But does anybody know what causes that? And we had a whole big discussion about that back in, I believe in January, when the first time it happened. But here we are, having it happen again in middle February. I'm glad the light's off, so I think the tires must have enough pressure in them. But why or when or who, I have no idea. 740-383-9944. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning there, Scott Spears.
Yes, how are you?
Fair. Acceptable and slightly irrespectable. I used to say that a lot. I should start saying that again because I think it's appropriate. And it's funny. I'm not a master mechanic. I'm good at replacing air filters, and I even replaced a headlight a couple weeks ago. I have long, skinny arms, and you kind of need that to get inside a hood and do that. On a car like yours especially, you probably know what I mean. You said the TPMS, it's not resetting. Does it still say the tire is low? What exactly is the issue with that? I might have some ideas, because that's something I know a little bit about, because it is kind of computery.
Well, just the light comes on, and it says one of your tires has low air pressure, but the light will stay on for a little bit, and then it will go out, and none of the tires ever look like they're flat or have low air pressure.
Right. Do you have one of your own tire inflators / measurers? I mean, I keep one in the car usually. The Giant Eagle has a free gauge and air, but there's no Giant Eagles out there. So you may have to pay $1 to go to Speedway and get air, which is kind of dumb, but there's got to be somewhere there that has free air. And I imagine a lot of tire shops will do it as a courtesy. Generally, if it's inflated to the proper amount, once you turn the car off, even if it's just for a few seconds and you start it again, it should reset, but definitely measure, because they might be off. You have a Honda, right?
Right.
Okay. And I'm thinking if it's below, depends on if it's the front or the back, and it's front wheel drive, I believe. So usually if it's under 28, that's when you see the icon, right? The little tire flat or tire low icon.
Right.
Usually if it's under 28, that's what will trigger it. I'm just thinking about cars that I've had. Actually, when I had my dad's car, he had an Accord. I mean, a similar car to yours, and I actually did replace the tires. And I actually now remember the icon was a little bit stubborn, but once it's inflated, it should be fine. But do measure it. I'll look on the side of the car to see what the recommended amount is in PSI. And I don't know if where you can go, like to a convenience store, to get free air, or if you don't have one of those air things. Next time I'm up there and see you, Scott, I'll be happy to borrow my air gauge. It actually works really well. But most tire shops will do it for you as a courtesy. You may want to just try inflating, 1 to 2 over what it says, then just take some of the air out to reset it.
Well, I'm just confused.
It's expensive to replace that TPMS, so normally when you get new tires, they reset it. But normally just turning the car off and back on again will do it.
Well, what's weird to me is it will stay on for like a week, and then after a week, it will go off.
Okay. Do you think there's a Honda dealer there, right? Do you think they might help you out as a courtesy?
Well, what I think is happening.
See if one of the guys there knows, and again, your TPMS might be off. That would be a pain. Let's hope that isn't the problem. It's just some little bug with the computer system. You know, nowadays, a car is a computer on wheels, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, but what I think is happening, to be honest with you, is because I have had low tires in the car before, and then I've went and put air in them, and the light goes out. So I think what is happening is I think in the winter, when it's particularly cold, and we have big air changes, it does affect the tires, and I think what is happening is the air will change, the temperature will change, and it's affecting the pressure, I don't know, in all the tires or one of the tires or what it is. And then when it warms back up a little bit or gets cold, depending on which way the tire is having the issue, it goes back to normal and the gauge goes off.
Yeah, if the winter, you know, air will contract in the colder temperatures, but it should still be nowhere at least the recommended amount. I think it might be like 36 when it's hot. Then you might start driving it in the morning. It'll be closer to 30, but then it'll start increasing as the air warms up. That's something I've noticed. But it shouldn't be so low that the light will come on. And again, and normally it's if it's under 28, or might be like 28 and 30 based upon the axle. So if that's the case, it might be an issue with the TPMS, but you don't want to drive the car with the air pressure too low. That'll affect gas mileage and affect the tire life and handling and a bunch of other things. So I would suggest you can invest in one of those self-service air pumps and measurers. Menards at Home Depot have them, but I mean, it's a $20 item. It's worth having because you never know. And sometimes if there's a slow leak, it's not going to happen while you're driving right past the tire store. So that might be a suggestion. Or see if the local Honda dealer will look at it and advise you. But if it is doing that, and there's nothing wrong with the TPMS, then the tires do need to be kept to at least a minimum PSI. That's the best thing. Because no matter how cold it is, it should never drop below the point where it's going to trigger that light, which is typically around 28. So there's my, scientific / IT / crack mechanic analysis of the issue.
All right.
Next time I'll bring my gauge thing with me, Scott, and so next time I see you, you're welcome to use it, because this might be an easy problem, or it might be something with a TPMS, but these kind of things happen nowadays, again, with all the computers and gadgetry inside of a car, inside and outside of a car.
I guess we'll see how it shakes out.
All right, no problem, Scott. See you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And again, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Feel free to give me a buzz here. 46 coming up on 47 minutes past the hour, WWGH radio time. And again, if somebody else is on the line, the phone will ring busy, and it just means that we have somebody else on the line. Keep on trying back. 740-383-9944. The old tire pressure, tire light issue. And years ago, of course, we did not have this light in a car, so it was not a problem. 740-383-9944. Now, here's another question I have relating to cars. Because I have not had on this particular car, I have not had the brake pads replaced I don't think I've ever had the brake pads replaced on this car, because I've had it for a little over 2 years now. But the previous car, I had my brake pads replaced, and I had a local guy do it, and I like letting local guys do something like that, because it's my understanding that's one of the few jobs left on a car that local people can still do. That's not a big thing that's going to mess with your electrical system or do a lot of damage to your car. But does anybody know of any good local people who still do brake pad replacement at an affordable cost? Because I'll tell you something interesting. I'm not going to tell you which one, but I was in one of the big stores, the big corporate stores that does brake pad replacement. And I was kind of shocked at what they were charging, because I kind of remember what the local mechanic who did mine charged, which probably was 3 or 4 years ago now. But it was nowhere near what these big box stores or big auto stores were charging. So does anybody know any around here in Marion? Any local mechanics who do good brake pad work? Has anybody needed to have their brake pads replaced recently? Give me a buzz here, 740-383-9944, or just any good mechanics in general. It's always good to know a good mechanic. You know, I really don't know what happened to the mechanic that I used to use. I'm not sure what became of him. I'm not sure that he was doing all that well when he replaced the brake pads on my car back in 2018 or 19, whenever that was. I think he was having a rough time. So does anybody know anybody who does a good job with that here locally? I know a lot of the local mechanics seem to be going away, and that's unfortunate. So if anybody knows anybody, give me a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Car questions and cemetery questions here this morning. Do want to remind everybody that the Ridgedale Lions Club is having their Daytona 500 dinner and auction, 19th annual, Saturday, February the 19th. Doors open at 4 p.m., dinner at 5 p.m. The auction will follow. It will be at the IGF Sale Pavilion, 2730 Harding Highway West, State Route 309 West near Big Island. Buy a ticket for $15 and enjoy a fun evening at the auction, which will include a half chicken dinner and sides prepared by Country Caterers. Buy an auction item and support the Ridgedale Lions Club service project. Tickets are available by calling a Ridgedale Lions Club member at 740-465-8001 or 740-244-6258. There are a limited number of tickets available. So again, that telephone number, 740-465-8001 or 740-244-6258. The Ridgedale Lions Club 19th Annual Daytona 500 Dinner and Auction, Saturday, February the 19th. Doors open at 4 p.m., dinner at 5, auction following at the IGF Sale Pavilion, 2730 Harding Highway West, State Route 309 West near Big Island here in Marion. Again, phone lines open. Any information on the cemeteries or the car issues? Anybody who does brake pads, or does anybody know anything about those tire gauges, tire pressure issues in cars? Looks like we're going to have a couple days of nice weather around here. That's nice. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz if there's anything on your mind this morning. A little bit of a quiet morning this morning here. Now, here's a story I wanted to bring up, because it is our goal here on this station to educate and inform people of the Marion community and things going on in the Marion community. Now, this is the story that I have, and heaven knows if I'm wrong on this story, let me know, but this is what I have. Coming up this election cycle here in Marion, there are some people who will be up for re-election. Now, one of the people who will be up for re-election is Ken Stiverson. Ken Stiverson is one of our county commissioners. He's been a county commissioner for a while now. Now, what's interesting about this is he does have a Democratic competitor in the fall, but that's really not the interesting part of this story. The interesting part of this story is that Ken Stiverson has two people primarying him in the May primary for county commissioner on the Republican ticket. That means there are two Republicans who are primarying Ken Stiverson in May. Now, what else is particularly odd about this is that these are two people who currently have office in Marion. Republicans who are already in office. One is Jason Schauber. We've talked about him before. He's a Republican city councilman. And the other is Dr. Mark Davis, who I believe is still the county coroner, who are both Republicans. And they are challenging Ken Stiverson in the Republican primary coming up in May for his county commissioner seat. Now, I don't think, usually in Marion politics, we very rarely have a primary for an office seat. And even if we do have a primary, it's usually not with an incumbent. If it's somebody who is in that position, or who has been in that position for a while, usually there's not a primary. But Ken, apparently, in May, the petitions were filed and verified last week, is going to be facing competition from Dr. Mark Davis, the coroner, and Jason Schauber, the city councilman, who are both Republicans. Now, I don't know why this has happened. It's kind of interesting. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? 740-383-9944, because usually in a primary, the big thing is being known. That's why being an incumbent is always to your advantage, because people know your name. And obviously that will help Ken Stiverson, but I'm certain that people know Dr. Mark Davis's name, being the coroner here, and also I believe he's still a practicing doctor. And then Jason Schauber has gotten a lot of attention lately, being a city council member who is also Republican. So does anybody know what's going on there, or why something like this would be happening? Because usually in a party, I think they sit down and they say, well, you know, why would something like this happen? I don't know. I don't know the backstory on this. And this is why I always go to the phone lines, because I think you guys know more than I do. You are a part of the inner workings of a lot of these groups where I am not. So does anybody know anything about this? Why Ken Stiverson is being primaried by Dr. Mark Davis, the coroner, and Jason Schauber, the city councilman, who both are currently Republican office holders as well? Any thoughts on this? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. 57 minutes past the hour here on this February the 15th, 2022. I just found that to be an interesting story. That's an interesting local story. And again, if the story's wrong, let me know. But when I was looking at the list of people who got their petitions verified to run for office, I saw that Dr. Davis and Jason Schauber were both on there for county commissioner. And then I thought, well, is there more than one county commissioner up for re-election this coming fall? And the only one that is up for re-election this coming fall is Ken Stiverson, who also had his petition verified. So I don't know what's going on there. Any thoughts or feelings on that? Give me a buzz, 740-383-9944. The local political scene here in Marion. And again, to me, this has nothing to do with party or really politics. Just curious to know why this happened. As I say, it's rare for an incumbent to be primaried, but to be primaried by two people in the same party who already hold office in the county and the city, well, that's a little different. Any thoughts on this, or is everybody staying hush-hush on this? Is everybody keeping their lips together? What's the word on the street when it comes to this one? 740-383-9944. We also have not heard from Mary Carnes, who we learned was the lady who used to work at the BMV, who was very well known for not passing people here in Marion. Hopefully one day we hear from Mary. Because, from my perspective, I would just like to know what that job is like. And what that job was like years ago in the 80s and the 90s when people were doing it. I think it would have been a very, very, very tough job. And this woman was so synonymous with the BMV that curious just to know what the job was like. So if anybody knows Mary, have her give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. So we've got any news on our friend at the BMV, Mary Carnes. Any news on the Republican primary for county commissioner with Ken Stiverson, Dr. Mark Davis, and Jason Schauber. Any news on where you can get some good brake pads here in Marion, or why would a tire gauge in a car continue to go off and on by the week? Any information on Eber Baker's grave or anything of that nature, give us a buzz, 740-383-9944. All right, we're going to take a quick time out here. Come back in about 15 minutes. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Doesn't seem to like you very much.
It's all an act.
It's not an act.
It's a big old act.
I'm going to blow up your act.